Curtis Dreads and SJR, reviewing 12 flicks, we've done 5 so far. Demons, ghosts, these two horror hosts are giving out skulls, not stars. Oh, flicks of horror, flicks of fright, things that go bump in the night. Getting blazed and feeling crazed, you fuckers better hold on tight. NLD's Christmas Slaycation, 7 more picks and it's fucking done. Hallelujah, hallelujah, we need a vacation.
And here we go, the Insane Asylum brings you once again Day 6 of NLD's A Christmas Slaycation. That's right. You have myself, as always, Otis B. Dreads. And as always, we have Rudolph. No, I'm kidding. Who do we have here? We have SJ. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm a little under the weather. I have a touch of... Oh, God, what is it called?
Sucking like bad cocks?
No.
Dirty God penis?
Damn, mother, fuck you, man. Fucking strep throat. So if I sound like I've been sucking dirty dicks, that's why.
All right.
I assure you I haven't.
Well, I'm sure the listening people can overlook that. Hey, we got a good one. Day 6, sir. And I think we have a really good one. This is one that I would actually suggest people go out and buy.
Shocked.
Shocked. Absolutely shocked. Other than the Scrooge, Bill Murray, that we did, I believe, in day 2.
Yeah.
I think this is the best movie so far.
Wow, that's high praise.
It has some comedic value, but it's mainly horror. I'm speaking of the 2015. I'm sorry, I said that earlier. 50. 2015 horror anthology film, as it's titled, A Christmas Horror Story. Now, you just watched this last night, SJ. I want to get your thoughts on it, because me and Mrs. Dreads watched it a few weeks ago, and I absolutely... I'm going to tell you what. I'll just put this out there. About halfway through this movie, I was like, man, what am I watching? This is kind of confusing. There's all these different, you know, stories going on. By the end, and the twist at the end, which I have to say, there is going to be a spoiler, okay? So this is your spoiler alert. If you haven't seen A Christmas Horror Story, you may want to pause or just stop this podcast right now, because we're going to talk about the end. Go watch it, come back, and listen.
Yes.
That was the one thing that grabbed me about this film. But let's not jump ahead of ourselves, SJ. Tell me what you thought about this, you know, kind of let's go along, because it was an anthology. There was like three stories, I think it was, going on at one time, all kind of connected by the one William Shatner.
He's right.
You see what I did there? I did the William Shatner voice.
Yeah, it was a great impression.
Thank you.
5 stars, 5 skulls.
Tell us about the movie, SJ.
I thought this flick was is pretty good. Beyond that, it's actually kind of great.
Are you doing the William Shatner?
That was a piss poor attempt at one, but so as you said, you know, this is. They call it an anthology on Wikipedia. I'm not sure if I, I see where they would say that. And there's one story out of, you said there's three. I consider there to be four if you include the whole Santa Claus story as, you know, the kind of thread that weaves it all together.
Sure.
But I thought it was more like one of those pieces where it's in the life of all these different people that live in the same town on Christmas Eve. And so it goes back and forth between all these stories, but it's got this kind of two threads that weave through it. The Shatner as kind of the MC of things, quite literally here, because he plays a radio DJ during the Christmas season that goes by DJ Dangerous Dan.
Dangerous Dan. Man, and here all I could come up with was Otis B. Dreads.
Hey, Otis B. Dreads works.
It does, but not as good as Dangerous Dan. And I'm also not William Shatner.
That is very, very true. Two totally different tax brackets. But DJ Dangerous Dan, the booze-swilling Christmas song-playing DJ through this movie, fucking hilarious. It's almost like just the Shat improvising most of his lines while boozing it up, and it's great. So we start off with kind of a shot after the opening credits of the North Pole, which is kind of the CGI weird acid trippy version of the North Pole. And but we cut to the
radio station. It's almost like a compound
station,
if you ask me.
Yeah, it is. It's like almost like a twisted
a fortress. Land.
Yeah, like a Land of Oz or something like that. But so we cut to the radio station where DJ Dangerous Dan is spinning some Christmas tunes, and he's having this great banter back and forth with, I guess, his producers or, you know, other people behind the scenes. You never hear them say anything, but he's kind of bickering back and forth with them.
Did we ever hear any of your great Christmas classics on the Dangerous Dan show?
Unfortunately not.
We did not, but you will hear them here. So, yes, sorry, continue.
I have a deal with Time Life Records, man. It's going to be the best of SJ singing the Christmas classics.
You don't want to miss that. We're giving away free CDs here coming soon.
Yeah. I'll even sign it for fans out there so, and completely devalue the whole thing.
Right.
But so we start off there, and there's a moment where DJ Dangerous Dan is trying to get Norman.
Stormin' Norman,
the weatherman. He's trying to get him to come in and say some words or something. He's asking him a question or something. And Stormin' Norman is, you know, behind he's on the other side of the glass. And he holds up a piece of paper and it says, "Fuck Christmas," and slams it up on the glass. And, of course, that gets a little reaction out of the chat.
Well, the funny thing about that, I thought, was, you know, Dangerous Dan, of course, the chat, is like, oh, Stormin' Norman, he's going to write a Christmas card. Oh, this is exciting. And he puts up, fuck Christmas. He's like, oh, and he takes his glasses off, and he's all looking, and,
I don't think Jesus would. Like that.
Yeah, but, he was like, so you know who heard that? Jesus. You know who else heard that? His father.
Right.
His dad.
So then Stormin' Norman storms out of the studio.
I see what you did.
And so he's gone, and you think he's just a tertiary character, just a throwaway kind of joke character. But yeah, as we'll find out, he turns out to be a much more pivotal role in this movie. So
yes, sir.
From there, we cut to the first story. In this first story, it's a couple of high school kids, three high school kids, Dylan, Ben, and Molly, who want to do kind of a pseudo documentary about a couple of murders that happened in the basement of their school a couple of years before, I think. And the basement of this school was basically a convent where back in the day, women who became pregnant out of wedlock would kind of be hidden and be forced to have abortions sometimes. And just
dirty
kind of gruesome,
whore.
Dirty, you shut your dirty horror mouth.
Dirty horror mouth.
Oh, that's fucking creepy. Don't do that. So they had this grand scheme to break into the basement and bring their camera and their microphones and do a little documentary to expose the truth of what happened.
And wasn't it for a school project or something? Because I think that was mentioned. You know, you really want to go through all this, because remember they were sitting in the car and they're watching on this phone or iPad or whatever the hell it was, laptop. They're watching officer, a black cop, who is, you know, exploring this crime scene, which is apparently at, you know, the time of the crime scene. And they're watching this, and all of a sudden this dead body, this mutilated body, of a woman falls out of, you know, good jump scare, one of the first in the movie, falls down out of the ceiling. This guy just starts, you know, reciting, you know, words to a song. It was just very, very strange religious type banter.
Yeah, I think it was a quote from the Bible or something.
That's right.
And it was written on the wall in blood as well. And
yes,
one of the bodies they find is kind of in a crucifix kind of pose up on the wall, stuck to the wall, and with his head bashed in. And yeah, these two cops, it's I guess body cam footage or official police footage that these kids are watching in the car.
I think so. Yeah.
So, and that's pretty much all they have.
Go ahead.
No, that's just, I was going to say that's pretty much all anybody has to go on is this police footage that they're watching. And it's kind of abruptly ends with this this black officer obviously traumatized and just repeating this religious banter over and over.
And again, you think that this is maybe one of those characters that, isn't going to have, you know, a big spot in this.
Right.
Little do you know. And what it is with these, you know, three teenagers who are, you know, apparently doing, you know, some sort of, I think it was a school project on her part. And what you don't realize is that all of this stuff is all like coinciding. It's made very well up to this point. It dies down after this point. So we have the three teenagers, the first story, the three teenagers who are, you know, doing some, you know, kind of, what would you call it, ghost hunting, or are they just investigating the site of a murder scene?
I think it's a little bit of both. It's kind of like a ghost hunter / investigative journalism piece.
I kind of got the ghost hunting thing. I just wanted to get your opinion on that. So that's one of the running stories. The second one. Here we go with the cop that they saw in this police footage or whatever it was. Now we have our second story, and that involves apparently a cop who has that, you know, he was traumatized by this. It created a lot of maybe PTSD. He has some anger issues. It's implied, and not really implied. They come right out and tell you that, you know, that there's some issues with him and his wife, and of course they have a little boy together. So he's trying to make things great, because the Christmas before he was not around, you find that out, you know, later, as he mentions. So he's going to take his son out and do the very un-police officer thing to do, and they're going to trespass and cut down their own tree.
Right.
And what happens then? They cut the tree down. They're all excited. Him and his, old lady. It kind of seems like they're trying to work things out. They look behind.
She's very against the idea.
What's that?
And she was very against the idea of trespassing. And
Yes, she was. As a matter of fact, but, this is not a very good, you know, you're not being a very good role model as a police officer. He's like, right. Hey, nobody's going to know.
Right. Listen, it's an adventure with our son.
We're doing it for our son.
Yeah, we can all come together by trespassing and stealing trees off somebody's land.
Right.
But
So, they cut this tree down. They're dragging it back to the car. The son is kind of trailing behind. All of a sudden, he, you know, is distracted. The son, that is. Little boy, what'd you say, about 6, 7?
Yeah, something like that.
And he ends up, he's gone. He just vanishes. And
right.
they go and, you know, the mom and the dad go looking for him. Can't find him. They get to one spot where they find him crawling, or they find him in the vagina of a tree. Now, when you watch the movie, that was the first thing I thought of. I was like, man, this is a big tree vagina.
You would think that.
I did. You know what I swear, thought? Man. It just looks like a huge vagina cut into a tree. And there's a big gaping hole in the... In the tree, and here comes this, you know, their son crawling out. It was almost like he was playing hide and seek or whatever, but he comes out of this tree quite different.
Yes.
And you don't realize that until the end. So there's your second story. What is our third story in this anthology? Because we'll touch base. We'll go back and touch base on each of these. Just wanted to, you know, lay it out there. What the hell is going on here?
Yeah, it's really complicated, and it's kind of hard to describe it. This is another one you just have to see. But the third story concerns this teenage girl. Her name's Caprice, that goes to the same school as the kids from the first story. And she's actually the one that gave Molly from the first story. That's her name, right, Molly?
I think
yeah. So Caprice is the one that actually gave Molly the keys to get into the basement, which is totally off limits, especially since it's now a crime scene. But so she gives the keys to Molly, and then she is kind of forced into this, reluctantly, into this family trip where they're going to visit their Aunt Etta, which is a strange name. But you can tell on the ride over that none of them want to go. None of them want to be there. They all kind of hate their Aunt Etta.
And the only one that really wants to go is their dad. He's the one that kind of set this all up, you know, and it turns out to be kind of a... You know, like a business type deal. You know, he's trying to get support from the rich aunt to, you know, fund his, you know, investment or whatever. That also comes out later. But yeah, nobody wanted to be there, and they got a little brat fucking kid too.
Oh yeah, he's a total little shit. You can tell right from the giddy up that he's gonna cause some fucking problems.
I think he's related to Ryan from Jack Frost.
He could very well be bosom buddies. So, but yeah, they finally arrive at Aunt Etta's place, and they're just kind of sitting around. She's just kind of this ice queen. I think the mom in this family makes reference to the fact that her house is kind of like some kind of a fucked up version of Dracula's castle or something.
Oh, Dracula and somebody had a gay affair and built a house or something.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
I can't remember who exactly, you know, she said, but yeah, Dracula and somebody else.
Right. If Dracula was gay, this is what his capsule would look like. Right. So it's obviously, she's obviously very wealthy. You can tell that just from the decor and the big, you know, stereotypical fireplace and all the little kitschy shit.
And very much a cunt, if I do say so myself.
Yeah, she is a cunt. And the groundskeeper, is it the groundskeeper? Caretaker.
Caretaker, yeah, yeah. Caretaker. Pretty much same damn thing, I mean, in a sense.
But he's also a real nice piece of work called Gerhardt.
Mm-hmm.
And we see he sees the family pull in the car and, you know, gives them that 1,000-yard stare, that soulless stare as they drive up.
With a chainsaw in his hand, mind
you. With a chainsaw, yes. Implying, well, what you think would be implied by that. So, like we said, the boy's a little shit. And while the adults are talking, his eyes are kind of roaming the room, and he sees a figurine of Krampus.
And then wasn't there one of Santa Claus right there, too, right?
Yeah, Santa Claus and Krampus, two little figurines on a table. So he's kind of pawing at them. Exactly. So he starts kind of toying around with this little figurine. And that really upsets Aunt Etta.
Well, Gerhard first. Don't touch that little boy. That is not a toy.
Right.
And what's this little shit do? Very purposely. Like, you know, I think this kid was, you know, a fucking cat in his previous life. Because he very purposely just, boop, knocks it right off. It breaks. That's when the aunt comes in and is like, oh my God, what did you do? And, you know, the mom's like, oh, we'll pay for it. Didn't want to fucking be here anyway, but,
Right. Yep. So right there is a little foreshadowing of things to come.
Now let's move forward, because we're just touching base on all these little stories here. Now let's move forward to what we see in the very beginning of, you know, pretty much this movie. And that would be the Viking Santa Claus.
I was going to say Otis B. Claus.
He does kind of look like, I even said that to Mrs. Jarrett. I said he kind of looks like Bill Moseley.
Right.
But this, and then he almost looks like, you know, a Viking. If the Vikings had a Santa Claus, he's got these, like, you know, big leather boots that are strapped up from the back.
Right.
And, you know, he's got like a braid on the one side of his head. And I mean, he's not your typical looking, you know, child Santa Claus. And his story is, there he's, you know, sitting in there in the little workshop. He's got his little elves around. Here comes Mrs. Claus. Not what you all would think would be what Mrs. Claus would look like. A very younger, attractive looking Mrs. Claus. Not the, you know, 80-year-old right. white hair Mrs. Claus. Very different, younger Mrs. Claus. Comes in with cookies, and all the elves are like, yes, yes, we need energy, you know, for the night of making toys. And one elf, I believe his name was Shiny. Is it Shiny?
Yeah, I think so.
He's not wanting any cookies, which is very odd, because elves like cookies, and they need that energy to keep making toys for Santa.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The record scratch moment, like when you refuse the cookie, that's almost like a hush falls over the whole, like, nobody's ever rejected a cookie. No elf has ever said no to a cookie.
Right.
So they know something's up already.
Already. And Mrs. Claus bends down and is like, you sure? And what's he say? I said I don't want a goddamn cookie, you rainbow fucking snow whore.
And then slam
rainbow reindeer. Reindeer fucking snow whore. I said rainbow.
Different movie.
I thought that was hilarious.
All the elves in this movie are fucking hilarious.
So,
but that set the tone.
He then after lashing out, and everybody's like, oh! You know, he takes his hatchet that he has in his hand, and slams it kind of like what looks like through the outside part, the pinky side of his hand, and like just boom, like 3 inches in, cuts right into his hand. And apparently from that, he bleeds to death. Well, this strikes everybody odd because, you know, the thing is that elves don't fucking die.
Right.
And this elf is fucking dead. So what does that mean? Now we have zombie elves.
One of my favorite parts.
It's great. So let's go back and those are your main story plots that are going on in this movie. That's why it's kind of, you know, hard to really describe it all. It's not like one plot in a movie. You got different stories going on, but they're all interlinked. What was your favorite? I'd say what's one of these stories was your favorite?
Well, my favorite is the Santa, the one you just hit on. It eventually becomes Santa versus Krampus through a lot of contrivances and all these stories weaving together. But my favorite one has to be the police officer, the Sir Scott story, you know, going and getting the stealing the Christmas tree with his kid and trying to make things work again, and come to find out that their boy that came out of was rebirthed out of the tree vagina, as you so eloquently described it, is not, in fact, the same child at all, but a changeling. So he's basically a demon who's taken on the disguise, the physical appearance of their young son. I thought there was some really creepy shit in that one.
Yes.
Some really exorcist mixed with, I don't know what, mixed with something where he's crawling on the ceiling and, oh man, just his behavior. That little kid actor was really good in that.
I think all three of them. I also thought the same. And when he stabbed his old man with the fork because he's sitting there shoveling spaghetti in his mouth.
That was fucked up, man. That was fucking disturbing.
He's like, hey, didn't you hear your mom? He sticks his hand out there. Smack! There you go. There's a fork. And a fork you, pappy.
Right. I was on my third plate of fucking spaghetti, you asshole.
Right. Settle down.
And he doesn't speak. He like loses the ability to speak. And I don't know. That one was really, really creepy to me. And it was kind of a strange ending to that part. But I don't know. Which part was your favorite?
I'd have to say the Santa Claus one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you really think that's, it's in and of itself, its own story. You don't realize how deep and weird it goes. And it goes back to the beginning, as you alluded in the beginning, Stormin' Norman. And here's where the spoilers come in. Stormin' Norman storms out, is for some reason disgruntled about Christmas.
Yeah, I would say slightly disgruntled.
Slightly. Is pretty much delusional, and I guess in a very schizophrenic, you know, it's like he's acting out things that he sees in his mind, and what he sees through his eyes is kind of, I'm trying to think of, you know, his mind is distorting what he sees. So, he's acting out these things as if they are real and they're not.
Right.
Did I do that justice?
it's hard to do it justice.
It is.
But it's basically everything that's happened in the movie is something that's happening in the real world, but being interpreted through his psychotic mind.
Yes.
So all of these other stories, which with the exception of the second one, my favorite one, the changeling one, are all like the kids in the trapped in the school basement. That one, all those characters are people that work in the radio station, or is it a mall that he goes to?
Well, he was doing that food drive.
Oh, the food drive.
Yeah,
that's right.
That was mentioned, in the beginning by a Dangerous Dan.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
He was going to be down there at the food drive. And remember, he was like, Storm and Norman, why don't you tell us, isn't there supposed to be a visitor down there at the local food drive, which is supposed to be Santa Claus?
Right, and yeah. So he's going to don the suit and go down to the food drive and be the man of the evening, so to speak, Santa Claus. So yeah, it kind of alludes back to Christmas Evil, man, with the concept of a deranged Santa, except this one, I guess you could say he does believe he's Santa, but he's much more murderous and much more unhinged and without any kind of a love for the season or anything. He basically becomes a mass murderer in one night. And as the movie progresses and, you know, keeps cutting back to Dangerous Dan, he's alluding to the fact that there's a hostage crisis or something happening at the food drive and telling everybody to just stay home, don't go out. And you don't really know what he's talking about. It's kind of doesn't go along with all these other stories until the very end. You put it all together and realize, oh, what he's talking about is Dangerous Dan. And so all of the scenes of Santa and his elves and the zombie elves and everything, all the zombie elves are people that are at the food drive. All the characters from all these stories are people that are there. And when they get murdered in their respective stories, it's, in fact, Storm and Norman himself is doing it. Even Krampus isn't a real character in the film.
Right.
And we should mention Krampus in this movie is kind of a metal representation of Krampus.
Metal wrestler.
Yeah, I was about to say metal.
That dude is buff as WWE. Fuck, man. I had to cover Mrs. Dredd's eyes. Said, don't look at him.
She's going to be having sexual fantasies about Krampus.
I know.
Great.
No, my name is... No. My name is Otis, not Krampus. Why am I hearing you go, oh Krampus, no, stop, Mrs. Dredd.
Oh, thanks for putting that visual in my head, by the way.
You're welcome.
But yeah, I don't know, man. I thought it was a great twist. I didn't really see it coming.
I didn't either.
Maybe I'm a dumbass for not seeing it coming, because you go back and you watch, when you see Dangerous Dan, you only see him in the beginning of the movie for like a few seconds, really. It's the same actor, but when you see Santa, he's done up so well that you don't put two and two together.
It's not actually. I don't think it is the same actor.
It is.
Is it really?
Looking at it right here, George Buza or Buza.
That's the same actor, really.
Santa Claus / Norman.
Interesting.
Yeah. You go back and watch that scene, and then when you see him at the end, you can tell even more. It's just him without all the, it's him with the cheesy Santa beard on, rather than, you know, the actual beard that he was rocking in the Santa Claus scenes. But
you can tell by the Otis B. Driftwood eyes,
right?
He had that. He had that in the brow. You know, it really looked like Bill Moseley. So without giving too much more away, because we're only tapping the tip of the iceberg, just the tip, baby.
Just the tip
of this day six film. What the hell are you going to give this one, my friend? A Christmas Horror Story 2015. What's SJ giving it skull wise?
I'm giving this one a solid 3.75, yeah. 3.75, baby. Because I almost gave it a 4, but I don't know my justification. It just didn't feel like a solid 4 to me, but almost.
Well, I apparently thought about it a little more highly than you did, because I'm giving it a 4.25.
There you go. I can see that. I respect that.
You know, because I really liked the psychological twist that you really didn't see coming. When you watch this, and of course, if you haven't watched this, hopefully you're not still listening. We didn't spoil it for you, but I fucking warned you. I really like that part, man, because it went kind of, like I said, psychologically, you know, you kind of delve into the, you know, deranged mind of Storm and Norman and his perception of the world. And like you said, it did have that Christmas evil type thing about it, where this guy was, you know, deranged, you know, he snapped for some reason. I don't think we ever know why Storm and Norman just, you know, went all fucking batshit crazy. It's never really said that I saw. He just says, fuck Christmas. Boom. I'm fucking killing people. I'm going nuts. You know, things are bad right now, whatever. I loved it. I absolutely loved that part. And, you know, if you want to know about the other two stories, just watch the movie. That's what I'm giving it. 4.25. I highly suggest that you watch this one this holiday season. I'm going to go out and buy it. I'm going to find it and buy it, and this is something I'd watch all year round. Do you suggest this to our listening people?
Yes, definitely. Definitely, definitely do. Go out and at least download it. If you can find it physically, get it. It's worth the purchase. I want to give a shout out to this movie has three directors. So this joint was brought to you by Grant Harvey, Stephen Hoban, and Brett Sullivan, with Steve Hoban also being one of the producers. So shout outs to those guys, because this couldn't have been an easy movie to put together with all the back and forth. So,
yeah.
But yeah, everybody go check it out, man. This one really rocked.
I agree. Thank you, sirs, with the ones that you mentioned, for bringing us what I think is, again, one of the best movies so far. Day six in the bag. SJ, thank you. We're getting closer and closer to the... It's the final countdown. Was that horrible?
No, man, you should do some intro songs.
Oh, you never mind. I'm not going to say what I think you should do. Dreadheads, the new year is coming. New Year's Eve, when we all like to tear it up a little bit. And if you like to tear it up a little bit, too, don't forget, so do we. We got a kick-ass New Year's Eve show coming for you. So you just stay tuned. And so I got to say, hey, day six in the bag. Thank you, SJ. And everybody, have a silent night, deadly night.
Thank you for fucking listening to a fucking Christmas show. All of you dirty dreadheads, let somebody fucking know. All of the other podcasts, they can go and fuck right off. Otis and fucking SJ, the shit is really fucking boss. Plenty more good flicks to see, yeah, we'll cover those. Murders, geeks, and lots of shrieks, and all of Santa's ho-ho-hos and freaks. Thank you for fucking listening. We think you all are really cool. We'd be nothing without you, 'cause horror fans fucking rule. Yeah, horror fans fucking rule. I said horror fans fucking rule. Fuck yeah.